Hey friends, welcome to Conversations with Kenzie, a podcast hosted by yours truly, Kenzie Brenna. No topic goes unturned here. We talk about everything with everyone. We like to get raw, and sometimes we get heavy, and sometimes we swear. So I'm warning you now. Also, we are working remotely, so audio quality between host and guest may differ. Lastly, check out our show notes for giveaways, fun promotions, or discounts to our favorite stuff. Enjoy the show. All right. Hello, Zach.
Hi, Kenzie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well.
I'm so excited to have you on the podcast because I've been following your work for, I think it's only been about like a month or a month and a half. And I actually found you through somebody's highlight of men who are talking about mental health. So I found you through that, and I've just been kind of gobbling up some of the stuff that you've been putting on there. And I'm so happy that you agreed to chat with me today. Do you want to first start off by telling people, you know, a little bit about who you are and a little bit about your backstory?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Zach Alexander. I am a shamanic healer and a shadow work coach. My path into this field is pretty unique, like a lot of like alternative health practitioners. I come from a heavy history of childhood trauma. Definitely after that, there was like some substance abuse. I was a failing student my whole life. When I got into my early 20s, my kind of trauma kind of manifested into severe health issues. I was actually bedridden for several years. And that kind of took me on my healing journey of figuring out what was going on from a physical, mental, emotional level. From that point, I was able to kind of heal myself and figure out what was wrong. I returned to college. Became a straight A student, eventually gained acceptances to some of the top law programs in the US, even a full scholarship at one. And around that time, I ended up having what you would call a spiritual awakening. And what was coming through to me at that point was very clear. I was kind of being asked to heal on a much greater, deeper level, even though I had already been in therapy for years and had done a lot of work. And I resisted, as a male, I resisted that heavily. But ultimately, just after one semester of law school, I withdrew. I ended up working with shamanic healers and alternative health practitioners and kind of learning all these different modalities, applying them to myself, opening up my own healing practice, which ended up becoming successful over time. And it was really just kind of bringing about a cohesion within the mind, body, soul connection with people. And so I've been very passionate about the work I've done.
Oh my God, that sounds like an incredible journey.
Definitely. It's been a weird one for sure. Yeah.
Definitely one that has, you know, pain. And also it sounds like you have a lot of love that you found in there. Mm-hmm. I am curious to hear a little bit about, you know, the link between being like a failing student and having health issues. You know, when that started to happen when you were a teenager, did you think at all, like, was there any language? Did you have any language around this might be connected to things that I experienced in childhood?
I mean, I was a failing student just because it was my way of trying, I think, to get attention. And honestly, like the resources just weren't there for me to do well. I was so traumatized. I could barely sit in my seat. I was also incredibly rebellious. I was just a troublemaker. I really had no ambition or drive to do well or succeed in life. I just felt very left behind by the systems and institutions. And I, at that point in our public education system, my trauma responses were kind of being received by those around me as I was dumb and unintelligent. Mm-hmm. And so those messages were given back to me, and I was kind of reperpetuating those narratives in my own work. Part of the reason why I returned to college was it was kind of like a I'll show you type thing. And I became a 4.0 student. And I was trying to show to the people in my past, like, clearly something was going on. Clearly I wasn't okay. And you guys left me behind, right? Mm. I think a lot of kids who are rebelling at a young age, I mean, some of the smartest, brightest people I've ever met did incredibly poorly at school because they're not being listened and heard to. So why are they going to invest their effort and time into this, right?
Mm. Oh my gosh. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. School was such a source of pain for me, both like just socially and academically, you know, not learning the same way that other people learned and the shame and embarrassment that came around that. And then also, like you said, just acting out and not putting effort in for a reason, you know, like
saying kind of like a fuck you. I'm going to show you guys that I'm how much I can, how little I can care. And that was that like became a whole thing because it's almost like the self-fulfilling prophecy because then people see that you don't care and then they don't put effort into you. And then it's like reconfirmed in your head. You're like, see, I told you you didn't care. And that's why I don't care and whatnot. And you had this post. This was the first post that I had actually read of yours. And it was society does not allow men to heal. I would love to hear a little bit about that in this conversation because I reshared that and I talked about it. I sent it to a few of my friends and we discussed it because I have been kind of trying to listen more to men and listen more to certain things that they're facing or they're struggling with. And it's kind of like this untalked about thing that I kind of feel that is happening. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to hear a little bit of your thoughts on that, on the society does not allow men to heal.
Well, yeah, I think men are almost more than 4 times likely to commit suicide than women. Obviously, even though women are much more likely to attempt suicide, men have much higher rates of addiction and men also have much higher rates of narcissism. Okay. And I think there's a link in that. And because as men, our entire value and self-worth is derived from our ability to perform and be productive. Right. And when you go into healing, right, in any fashion or form, your ability to perform or be productive is greatly lessened. Right. And so for me, there's a huge reason why I resisted I had to have a very spiritual type experience to go into deep inner healing work because I understood the incentive structure within our society wasn't there for me. And to be fully transparent, me choosing to engage in this deep healing work, I severely lacked resources. I mean, I had to learn how to become a shamanic healer myself. Don't even get me too far down that train. And I went broke, right? I was at a top law school and I was going into poverty. There were days where I didn't even know if I could afford my type 1 diabetes medication. I was greatly shamed by those around me. I was considered weak. My friends didn't know how to respond to me. And so for most men, they're out there and like, why would I engage in this? Why would I do this? Like my own masculinity and manhood was constantly being called into question, even though I was doing what I felt was right. Because what people have to understand is the healing process is messy. And for men to heal, we have to bring up that scared little boy, honestly. We have to let that part of us be seen. We have to let that part of us express itself. And we can't always have clear structure around that. Right. And so a lot of us are just told to shove it and push it down. And then we derive various coping mechanisms, which can be a narcissistic response, which is honestly for most people an elongated fight response in terms of being in a fight or flight mode, in terms of being chronic hypervigilance, or going into substance abuse. And so it's really the narratives that we have as a society that going into healing for a man means you are weak. The resources aren't there. Men really do a poor job holding space for each other. And so it is very difficult. Now, luckily, fortunately for me, I was able to rebuild my life and I had a lot of the resources and tools that I was able to kind of teach myself. But for many men, they kind of get lost in that process.
And growing up, did you have someone explicitly say to you, like, you know, don't discuss these sort of things, don't discuss your pain, like hold it down? Or was it all implicit? Was it all just kind of implied and assumed around you?
It was implicit, explicit, very much. I mean, the amount of times I was told if I even showed an emotion, I was a sensitive child, mm-hmm. which I think that happens regardless of gender in terms of families who don't hold space for one another's emotions. It was very much held, you know, at times in relationships. It was very much held in the institutional structures and systems that I came mm-hmm. about it. Right. I mean, I got to be honest, we're not going to go too far into it. The way that my law school handled me coming to them, seeking out support was just abhorrent in every way. Right. And it was like, shove it. And I remember I had a panic attack for like the first time in my life and I couldn't show up for class. And the professor came up to me and she was like, she was going to deduct like an entire letter grade from me for that.
Oh my God. Even though
she knew the nature of my trauma and abuse, I had to beg her not to. And meanwhile, there's a woman who was going through, pregnancy during law school and she missed classes and was completely fine. Mm. And so I was given a lot of this messaging and programming that I was inherently bad for allowing myself to be vulnerable and be messy.
Wow. Wow. And then that must just create this cycle of like shame and embarrassment and then needing to cope with that and then potentially having unhealthy coping mechanisms and just like retreating and withdrawing even more.
Yeah, you get stuck in a cycle, right? Mm-hmm. And most men do is you're told to really shove it down. And if you don't have that capacity, or if you actually want to naturally engage in this work, you're weak. And for men in our society, that's the worst thing that you can honestly be told.
And what was like one of the first times that you started to open up or be vulnerable with people that could hold space for you?
I mean, I was very fortunate that I had an amazing, I'm 30 now. I had an amazing therapist I started seeing when I was like 20, 21, who literally saved my life. Mm-hmm. Like she took me from nothing and built me up and reflected back to me for the first time all the good qualities I had. It was the first time that someone was mirroring that to me and forming like, you know, almost like a secure attachment in a way where I felt seen and validated. And so I did feel very comfortable being vulnerable. But as I said, when I got into really the nitty gritty stuff of healing, when it really affected my ability to provide, I mean, that kind of destroyed my old relationship. It's like, you know, I wasn't able to kind of provide financially anymore for a little bit because I was so engrossed in the work that I needed to do internally. That space really couldn't be held for any structure in society.
Right. And so when you started going through wanting to become like a healer and wanting to do shamanic practices, did you find that you were seeing that there were communities of support or that there were men of support? And then that was kind of also reflecting back onto you like, oh my gosh, why did I have to search for so hard for this? Like, why wasn't it easier to find a space to heal or to find support?
Surprisingly, it was the opposite.
Really?
And I'll tell you why, because I've been pretty involved in the spiritual community for quite some time. And I've really kind of distanced myself from them over time because they engage heavily in bypassing. I actually went to like the spiritual alternative health community because I felt like the resources weren't there from the mental health community. They just want to leave you depressed, put you on an antidepressant, and that's kind of it. But the spiritual community kind of wanted you to bypass your negative experiences and emotions and use spiritual constructs as a way, like toxic positivity, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, everything happens for a reason. Oh, you're fine. I mean, this is past life karma, right? Like, I mean, I was told that stuff. I mean, I even went to healer one time and I was like, hey, you know, I'm having problems in my relationship and it seems like some kind of child stuff's coming up and I'm having difficulty regulating my emotions. And I was told, what past life is that from? I'm like, are you kidding me? So I think the spiritual community and the self-help community in general tends to want to disassociate away from people's problems. So I didn't really feel like that community was necessarily there as well. Now I have engaged in men's work and I've been in this men's group. I'm even going to give him a shout out. The Rising Man's Fire Circle. It's run by this amazing guy, Jetty Azuma. When I first got in there, which was 2 years ago, we were all terrified of each other. We were so scared to be vulnerable. And eventually over time, we've now created this space where we felt seen and able to express each other and heard. But it was like scared, frightened, abused dogs coming in initially that had to get to know each other. And we're like, oh, okay, we're safe here, right? It took us some time just to even trust other men to be able to hold that space.
Wow. Yeah. The spiritual bypassing is so real. And I've 100% experienced that myself. And I always found it so weird to be talking to a parent or someone older who kind of had this, you know, authority figure when I was heavily spiritual. And I would say something like, I'm hurt about XYZ. And then they would say something like, well, if you're hurt, then you're not in alignment with source. And I remember,
that's great. Yeah. Thank you.
I remember just, and there was, I don't know what it was, but whether or not it was like, I was just lucky to think like this, or it was just intuition, but I just always had a voice inside of me being like, this is not it. That cannot be it. And I ended up, you know, leaving the spiritual community. I'm an atheist now with a very large connection to the universe and to nature and to community. But I found that the bypassing and that toxic positivity also actually inhibited me from healing because It didn't ever allow me to process anything. It just constantly told me to withdraw and to connect back to source or to the universe. And that was a whole, like, you know, like leaving that and trying to feel your, you know, your negative feelings for the first time in your life was a whole, you know, mess and a whole shit show. But for men, it's almost like you guys have this other level, because for women, it's much more acceptable to cry, even though, of course, like, there's definitely stigma with it when we're called emotional, or we're saying that we're, you know, it's because we're on our cycles or whatever it is. But yeah, there is sort of this general societal acceptance for women to be emotional, to cry, to have friends, to lean on friends, to ask for support, to have empathy, to be vulnerable. There's a certain level of acceptance. But for men, it's like there's an added layer of, well, if you have to process your negative emotions, then please do so in the dark, in the quiet, in the corner, kind of thing.
Yes.
And so I can imagine that going to, was that a retreat that you were going to, or getting into that community, just must have been just like a complete 180 of everything that you've experienced with men and with culture in general.
Yeah, honestly, it's just an online Zoom group. It's nothing too crazy. I mean, he obviously leads, retreats and stuff as well, in terms of, you know, we are able to meet up with each other physically. But yeah, it was just an online container that we met in biweekly to be able to do that. And it was helpful and beneficial. But like I said, even that isn't enough in of itself, because Zoom conferencing can only get us so far, right? And so I think it's societal cultural attitudes where, like, you know, where we have to redefine what being a man is, because and being a strong, structured man. And As men, I do feel like we do have a role to protect and to provide and stuff. But at some point, if we have been through heavy childhood trauma, we have to go back and retrieve the little boy, right? And let that little boy be seen. And we have to create understanding that it's okay for men to engage in that process and to hold a container for that for some time, right? That it's okay to be weak for a little bit, too, in our society's terms of weak. I think healing is very strong and courageous no matter what. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with it is, yeah, we aren't allowed to be seen, witnessed, or accepted in a vulnerable state very often.
And that's because we have kind of put men into a box of needing to be strong, needing to be, we need to depend on them. We need to have them be stoic, and invulnerable in so many ways. I remember even Brené Brown, I think it was in her talk that's on Netflix, or it's in an interview somewhere, where she was talking about her husband. I think his name's Todd. She's talking about her husband, and they were having a disagreement or a fight or an argument. And, you know, she said, you can cry or you can be upset or something like that. And he was like, bullshit. No, I can't. Like, you want the strong man that is going to be able to, like, save this, do this. He's like, you don't want me to cry. You want me to do these things for you. And she had to stop herself and, you know, reflect and think of the ways that she was, like, co-creating that pattern that we so often ask men to be in.
No, and for me, there was really just, in my healing journey, there was just a 3 or 4 month period where I really couldn't work, where I really had to go in. And the messaging and program that came from all around me or whatever, and, you know, external family pressure and all that, was just deep shame. And it was like, you know, and for me, it did hurt. It was like, hey, I came from my background. I still got on top of law school. And it clearly wasn't a good fit. And I'm trying to do something deeper and bigger for myself, right? And I really can't show up in a healing capacity without me doing my own inner work and the levels and depths that I'm diving into. I don't feel like I can show up in a work environment properly. And the levels of shame that was perpetuated on me for not being able to perform for just a few months was heavy. It took years to actually work through that. Mm-hmm. And so that's something I think we have to look at, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there is, you know, you recently chatted about sexual abuse on your Instagram page, and it was so courageous and it was so incredible to hear a guy talk about that, because again, there's this difference of women coming forward and men coming forward. And, you know, statistics show that men don't come forward with sexual assault nearly as much as they need to be. And it was just, it was so profound and it was so powerful hearing your story. Would you want to touch in on that for us?
Yeah, sure. And so I went through child sexual abuse, and it may surprise people, but it was from my own mother. And it was from the time I was a toddler to the age of likely 7, when the school systems started to kind of pick up that something might be off, and attention was kind of drawn to that. And so when we talk about things not being reported, or boys not reporting, sometimes it's we're not listened to. I think I was incredibly resourceful about doing everything a child could do to give off every cue and signal at that age that something was going on at home. And it just was not listened to. Had I been a girl, maybe those questions would have been asked a little bit more. But I was essentially kind of left alone on an island, right? And then as the trauma responses kind of, you know, came about in my teenage years, and I just became a huge troublemaker, was insanely rebellious and always causing wreck and havoc. It was like, I am doing everything I can to receive help for someone to take an inquisitive position in terms of why I'm behaving like this or whatever. And that was not what I was receiving. So we're not even given sometimes that space to be held, that this could be happening to us too. And it is of epidemic proportions, because in my healing practice, a lot of my male clients were sexually abused as children from family members, friends, and they went through a very similar situation that I did as well. And so, yeah, the statistics are grossly underreported, but it has profound impact on us over years. And, you know, I mean, I even remember when I looked up books on healing from child sexual abuse, whatever, there was tons for women, right? Which is amazing. I think there was one decent resource for men. And so a lot of us are left to bury it, right?
Yeah, which just makes it so much fucking worse. Mm-hmm. So much worse, because the burying requires more coping mechanisms, and you just like, you cope and you bury and you cope and you bury. Thank you so much for sharing that. You said people may find it surprising that it was your mom. Do you think that that's because we just assume that, you know, moms are saints or that women can't do these things?
I do believe so. Yes. And I think you're seeing a lot more, you know, especially in the self-help or in the trauma healing space, around this awareness that, you know, mothers can be actually incredibly abusive too. Mothers can be narcissistic as well, right? And I think a lot of blind eyes were turned to my situation because there was this assumption, oh, it can't be that, right? And I gotta be honest, like, my mother was a one-on-one reading tutor at elementary schools outside the Philadelphia area. So you kind of put the math together in terms of, because I wasn't listened to, what was the effect and impact on other people and other children as well, right?
And let me know if this is out of bounds, but I'm curious if you're still in contact with her, or if you've had some type of reconciliation, or what that process has been like for you to come to terms with this horrific thing that happened to you when you were a child, and how you have either helped close that wound with her or without her.
I mean, I confronted her on it a little over a few years ago, and went into complete denial. And all that. And that's, yeah. So that was closure for me in terms of being able to say what I needed to say, to vocalize my truth, to kind of get a real clear picture of what it was I was dealing with, which is someone who I believe is incredibly mentally ill, and needs help and resources. I think through my process, as crazy it is, I have been able to find a level of compassion and empathy, because it's like, you know, something probably happened to her. Right. And, you know, we were talking about someone from the baby boomer generation, you know, and we're someone who, I, you know, from growing up, carry their insane own internal deep pain. So this is the thing, is child sexual abuse is an epidemic. It is, I believe it's like a parasite that wants to just kind of latch on and keep going. And so when I think of my mother, I think of a woman who was always trying to hide. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think it's a shame, because, like I said, it's something that we want to bury in the shadows. We don't want to look at, right? I mean, when young boys first started coming up around the abuses that were going on in the church, they were deeply shamed. When young boys first came up in the Penn State scandal with the assistant coach, Jerry Sandusky, the kids were deeply shamed. And so we want to keep pressing this in the shadows. And everyone is just ultimately hurt, right? And so I think it's just something we have to kind of bring to the surface and begin to actually look at.
And do you think that there was also a scandal in Toronto about an all-boys school that had to deal with abuse as well? And it got like, it didn't get that much attention at all. It was so, I found it so weird because I kept checking up on it and there wasn't like a follow-up. There wasn't much conversation around it. And that might just be the sexual abuse in general of just being very hush-hush because it's such an uncomfortable topic for us. But because it is so prevalent, it's kind of like this underlying parasite that we're not really talking about that affects us more than what we realize, because it just affects us by proxy. If it's something that we haven't gone through, it's definitely someone that we know who has gone through it. And do you think that there is sort of this air of like when boys come forward with it, that they not necessarily are lying, but that they might be, you know, exaggerating the truth a little bit, or that that couldn't possibly happen because that only happens to girls or anything like that?
Absolutely. I mean, you have to remember, like, my process, I was very conscious of people aren't going to believe me. And some of the steps I've taken in terms of being a failing student, then becoming a straight A student, then becoming well respected, like in the mental health, self-help community as ever, it took that much getting into a top law program for me to be believed. So how many people did not get there? How many men did not get there? Right. Mm. And just knew if I come forward, like, no one's going to believe me. No one's going to say anything. I mean, I think the Menendez brother case, I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
No. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, I mean, I just watched Dr. Nicola Parra. She had reached out to me and told me to, the holistic psychologist, she had reached out to me and told me to watch that. Mm. This was back in, like, I think the later 80s, early 90s. And these two boys were, I think they were going to like Princeton and UCLA. And the father, and they came from an extremely wealthy family, and the father was sexually abusing one of the boys, like on a routine, consistent basis. Mm. And eventually, like, the boys came clean, and it turned out the mother knew and she didn't care. And the parents, like, the kids actually thought, like, the parents were going to come after them and hurt them, possibly murder them if they disclosed the abuse to other people. So I don't really know the whole story, but when the boys came in, they said they were scared. They came in, they got guns, and they killed it, very maliciously, their parents. But when they went to trial, they were painted as these boys just wanting to get their parents' financial, you know, wanting to inherit all their parents' financial wealth, whatever. And they were trying to say, like, no, we were going through pedophilia, and it was never heard or listened to.
Wow. And then it, like, they broke.
Yeah.
They totally, completely broke. And that whole, like, I guess, like you said, that you mentioned when you started having like these trauma responses and you were acting out, and people blamed it on you just being a boy, like kind of like blamed it on like masculinity in a way. And really it was like this like cry for help.
Just a desperate cry for help and not knowing where to go, not knowing what do I do about this, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really think to a large degree that this transcends genders, right? But I think a lot, I've just seen in my own healing practice, I do not advertise myself as something. I don't call in these type of clients in terms of intentionally, but more than half my clients have been through child sexual abuse. And many of them Ivy League educated or have great jobs or whatever, but the systems have kind of failed them. The resources haven't been there. They don't know where to turn. They've had to kind of hide in the shadows. But, you know, there's many people who don't even have the ability to accrue these type of, you know, to even go to therapy. And so you're looking at high levels of poverty, crime, right? I mean, we're talking about 1 in 5 or 1 in 6 children are sexually abused. Like, it's creating so many of our issues in society, I think, are symptoms of this underlying thing of child abuse.
Yeah. And I guess we also just don't know necessarily how to be there for someone who comes to us about that issue. You know, if we'd like to think that we would be the most supportive person, that we would know exactly what to do, exactly what to say, that we wouldn't pass it off, that we wouldn't say anything to further, you know, harm or further hurt this person. But I would say like all of us, like we're not trained on, we're not like conditioned to be able to know what to say or do when someone comes forward with that. So I'm sure that there's instances too, where people will come forward. You've said this in your own experience where you come forward and then people aren't there for you. They can't hold space. They're not there. They're unsupportive. And then it's like, well, why am I going to reach out? Why am I going to do something about this? Why would I talk about it publicly? Why would I try to like change the system when the system is just consistently failing me?
Well, you know, and I'll give you a great example from my own personal life. You know, a lot more memories kind of came out, like, you know, a little over a few years ago, right when I had started law school. And that's when I had to cut off my family and there was a lot of pressure on me. And my therapist and my partner tell me, you have to seek support, Zach. You have to let people in. You can't do this alone anymore. So I went to my law school administration and I actually told them the nature of my abuse history. And I'll be completely transparent in saying where I was. I was at Washington University in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And my associate student dean had pulled me aside in a meeting and told me that someone with my situation could not do well in the first year of law school. And then went around and said that all my professors had told her that I would fail. When I disclosed the nature of my abuse and trauma, I eventually went to my professors and they were like, we never said that. Like, that was the support I received. And I was pleading with her. I was like, listen, I got here. My abuse has always been what it's been. And I still found my way here with much less resources than the other students. And you're just telling me that I can't succeed here. It was incredibly offensive. Right.
Wow.
And that was the support I received from a top legal institution.
Have you found that there's been a difference between when you have opened up about this between like men and women? Like when men hear of your story, do you find that they try to like bypass it or, you know, not really know what to say or do? Or do you find that it's like pretty equal between women and men?
You know, yeah, it varies. The surprising thing for me is when I started telling some of my male friends of my abuse history, the thing that I heard was me too. I was like, wait, what? And it's like, yeah, dude, my uncle when I was seven. But then they never wanted to visit it, right? That was kind of the difference, is the men would like kind of like, shit, like, man, that's so rough. That's tough. Like I have even had friends that have reached out to me like, dude, I had no idea you were carrying that pain when you're younger. Everything makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. But men don't know how to, I think, hold space for a long time. Not that they're not empathetic and passionate. Like, actually, some of my male friends were terrific, but it was like, I got to cut away from this. I don't know how to deal with this long term. Well, women were kind of able to kind of be there more over a longer period of time. They had kind of explored, like, while men had been through their own child's sexual trauma, which became like, wow, this is way more common than I realized just from talking about with my friends who had surprisingly been through it. They were told to bury it. Mm-hmm. While with the women that I'd been gone to, who were, you know, my female friends, had kind of done a lot of the work within themselves, right? So they kind of were able to understand and hold space for my process over a longer time because they knew what that looked like.
Mm. And have you ever felt like if I talk about this out loud, then it's going to affect the way that I'm perceived in my masculinity?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that video that I did where I disclosed it on Instagram, I was afraid of my career, honestly, and being fully transparent. But I made a conscious choice that I was going to put myself out there and be very raw in my emotional state, like not try and hide. Like, I wanted to de-shame emotional expression for men who were carrying pain. So I was very transparent about that, but absolutely. And with the men that I've worked with in my own healing practice, it is a bury in the shadows, because this somehow means we are less manly. Like, if we've incurred, right. And it's mm-hmm. unfortunate.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. But it's interesting because it's like, once we have a language around our experiences, and once we are supported, and once we have the bravery to face pain, sit with pain, and learn from it, we become quite courageous, you know, mm-hmm. and we become quite strong. But it's through that process that we're seen as like weak or vulnerable. And it's not, you know, you have to be incredibly strong in order to be tender in that vulnerability, which I know that's not a character trait that we place on men that whatsoever. It's, we want men to be stoic and be quiet and to deal with things, like I said, like in the dark, alone in a corner somewhere, not necessarily out in the open. And it's almost like I feel this way, and I think that this also transcends gender, where we want people to kind of heal themselves alone and then come back out into society and interact with people once they're fully healed.
Yep. Yeah. And honestly, that is literally how my process did kind of ultimately go for me. I did kind of have to go into a cocoon ultimately and then reemerge when I felt I was in a more stable place. But that meant that it was a very difficult process, whatever. I'm experiencing, even as a healer, I'm experiencing social anxiety to degrees that weren't there several years ago because I had to go into a cocoon for a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what society would just come back out when you're better. And fortunately for me, because of the nature of my work, because I'm engaged in this work so often, I was able to kind of do it within myself. But it's not ideal. I don't want people to have to engage in this process the way I did. I don't want that to be the default option, right?
Yes, absolutely. Like, you don't want people to heal literally in the dark and then try to come and emerge out perfect in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, like, oh, see, I went through my healing process and now I'm a pretty buttercup and it's all going to work out. But it's not mm-hmm. like that. Like part of the healing has to happen in community. Mm-hmm. You have, like, we have been in this, this transcends of, like, and just child sexual abuse. This is any form of abuse, right? Mm-hmm. Or any type of thing of just for shame to dissolve, it has to be seen, witnessed, and accepted, right? And abuse levels us with really high levels of toxic shame. Shame becomes actually toxic to our physiology and can create physical illness. So to dissolve that shame, we can't be in the shadows. Shame festers in the shadows. We have to be seen and witnessed and accepted amongst a group of people. And I don't know if you follow them, but the Sacred Sons does men's work and they're terrific with that. And they're not as well known as they should be. And I think that's the standard we have to begin to set as a collective is de-shaming the fact that this healing process is messy. It's going to require you to release emotions that were stored in your body from infancy, from when you were a toddler. So they will come out as little kid emotions. And that does not say anything about your own sense of self and who you are as a person. They're just stored emotions that have to be released in a certain way. So you no longer have to create these protection mechanisms to hide yourself from them, right?
Yeah, that is so, so, so well said. And how was, you know, when you came out to talk about this abuse, how was that received online particularly? Like, did you end up getting messages from people or from men, you know, saying me too, like, this has also happened and you have helped give me a voice? And when you get those messages, does it kind of reaffirm that this is so important? It's really important to be raw, to show, you know, this inner child and like what has happened and to be vulnerable and to share your story.
Yeah. I mean, I said in the video that I did recently, I said, if you have been through child sexual abuse, this is your, like, in the comment section, share your story. And I think more than 50, 60 people shared their story of abuse, many of which said it was the first time ever vocalizing it in a public form of any kind, online or of any sort. And I did have people reach out to me. It was like, finally, someone gave us a voice in terms of the family members creating narratives with school counselors before you can even get into them, right? Mm-hmm. About the disassociative phases, right? About the not even washing yourself because you don't feel worthy of being clean, right? Mm-hmm. And then the shame that comes with that. Like, all these things, people kind of said, finally, we're seeing, because everyone was afraid to kind of come out and share that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing and for, you know, creating that space where people can share their stories. Cause I know that that's also very, very, very heavy emotionally and can absolutely, you know, reopen wounds. And it can be very hard to hold space for so many journeys. And so I appreciate your work so much on this and I really value it. And I think that you're creating this like little world online where people can be themselves specifically, and men in particular can, you know, see themselves in you and be able to see this like confidence and this courage, and also know that you don't have to be confident or courageous in order to own your shit. You can literally just be vulnerable or be nervous or, you know, not have language around it and still be accepted and be held without shame.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And I think the important thing that I think we're trying to come to as men collectively is that masculinity doesn't exist in one predefined box, right? Healthy, mm-hmm. conscious masculinity. There's tons of different ways that we can show up, embody, and express that. And each man's is going to be unique. And I think each man is trying to replicate this one version, right? I mean, I love the work of this book called like The Superior Man and David Data, and they do great work. But I think this is one predefined thing of like, it has to look like this way. And it might not, right? Mm-hmm. Like men can express healthy, authentic masculinity that is unique to them in their own internal experience.
Mm, that's beautiful. Thank you so much, Zach. Where can people find you online?
You can find me. So I'm just kind of on Instagram and TikTok. Both are under ZA Energetics.
Perfect. And I know that the listeners today will have really appreciated this story. And we're just so grateful that you came on here to chat with us.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for giving me a voice and many others' voices as well, Kenzie. This matters a lot. So I really appreciate you.
Thanks so much, Zach. All right, friends, you made it to the end of the episode. You know what to do now. Head over to our Instagram account, Conversations with Kenzie, and let us know what you loved about the episode. Or let us know what you didn't love. What questions did we miss? What questions could we have asked differently? Let us know there. As always, stay curious, keep asking questions, and keep making conversations in your everyday life. Until next time.